Why do I conduct my show on this matter, Mundo?
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
All six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Welcome once again to yet another episode of the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its corporate sponsors. This is show number 24. 24. Wow, it seems like only yesterday they just started it. We're up to episode number 24. That's pretty good. As it sits right now, it is technically Tuesday, 1:07 a.m. I got back from work about an hour ago, and it was my first day back at work after having taken 5 days off. Well, actually, I only took 2 days off. I took Wednesday and Thursday last week, and we had Friday off for the Easter holiday and, of course, the weekend. So that was 5 days off. And while it was good to have some time off, it's also good to get back to work and reestablish some sort of regularity schedule-wise. Before I do anything else, let me remind everyone of the blog for this show. And the blog is cupojo.blogspot.com. It's HTTP. There's no www. You don't need to do that. It's cupojo.blogspot.com. That's C-U-P-O-J-O-E dot blogspot, B-L-O-G-S-P-O-T.com. Blogspot, of course, has been hosting the blog since October, of course, when I started last October. And also they hosted my previous blog, Pax Liberalis. And if you have a comment or a suggestion, especially if you want to suggest some songs, because, you know, I pick the music for this, and it generally comes out of my 2,000 or 3,000 or so high-numbered collection of songs that I've just gathered over the few years. But if you've got a suggestion, I'm more than willing to listen. Just please don't be insulted if I don't play it. The only real qualification is that I just not hate the song. And a guy sent me a website that had a whole bunch of protest songs, and they're okay, but they're all that kind of old, you know, hippie type of stuff. And, you know, well, I'm sure that really does it for most people, but it really doesn't do it for me. I like to hear generally a lot of newer stuff. So, but if you do have some music or a song you want me to hear, or a comedy bit or something that has to do with workers' issues, or just something that you want to hear on the show, you can email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec@bellsouth.net. I like to hear from you. You know, I have some regular people who email me, and that's real cool. I got a guy named Ed Miller who sends me a lot of stuff. A lot of different stuff, and sometimes I talk about it and sometimes I don't. And he sent me one the other day, actually, that I was already aware of, and in fact I'm getting ready to write something about it to post it on the blog. And he got it, and I got it, via a website called juancole.com. That's juancole.com, who is apparently an Arabic teacher of some sort, or he knows something about it. And he got an article from, well, the link that he had was from The Age, which is a Australian newspaper. But the writer is Sean Raymond, who works for the Telegraph of London. Pardon me a second. A little water. But anyway, this is the article was entitled "British Commanders Condemn U.S. Military Tactics." And it was April 12th, and it said, senior British commanders have condemned American military tactics in Iraq as heavy-handed and disproportionate. One senior official said that America's aggressive methods were causing friction among Allied commanders and that there was a growing sense of unease and frustration among the British high command. The officer, speaking on condition of anonymity, said that part of the problem was that American troops viewed Iraqis as Untermenschen, which is the Nazi expression for subhumans. Speaking from his base in southern Iraq, the officer said, my view and the view of the British chain of command is that the Americans' use of violence is not proportionate and is over-responsive to the threat they are facing. They don't see the Iraqi people the way we see them. They view them as Untermenschen. They are not concerned about the Iraqi loss of life the way the British are. The phrase Untermenschen, which means literally under people, was brought to prominence by Adolf Hitler in his book Mein Kampf, or My Struggle, which was published in 1925. He used the term to describe those he regarded as racially inferior, Jews, Slavs, and Gypsies. Although no formal complaints have as yet been made to their American counterparts, the officer said the British government was aware of its commanders' concerns and fears. Untermenschen is the key word there. And again, that is a German word. Hitler coined it for those he felt were subhuman. And that is apparently how American soldiers are treating the Iraqi citizen. I'm sure it's not all American soldiers, but from some of the other reports I'm hearing on the ground, there's more than a few American cowboy types who are riding around undisciplined and just beating crap out of anything they see. Maybe not to that extent, but it's not going to win over the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people. You know, here's the thing about what went on there. I was against the whole idea, obviously, because it had nothing to do with the war on terror. It was just so obviously a revenge thing for Mr. Bush, or an oil thing, or a neocon thing where they want to use Iraq as like a base of operations to redefine the entire Middle East. And you know, if things had worked even the way they said they were, even though I still wouldn't have liked what was going on, I would have said, well, the end results would have been, you know, were good because, you know, you'd have a democratic Iraq and all that stuff. And, you know, and even though while I'm against the use of force in principle, unless it's a last resort, I would have at least accepted the fact that the Iraqis would have been better off. But the fact of the matter is that they're not better off. But what I'm interested in is why the British officer is surprised that this is the activities of Americans. Maybe he's just not enough familiar with the attitudes, the attitudes of these Americans. Because, you know, Americans are, there's still a lot of racial problems and a lot of problems like that in America. And there are people, white people certainly, who think black people are Untermenschen, subhumans, not deserving of voting. But to me, the real irony is that to the Bush administration and their corporate allies, the people, you know, the major people who fund these, you know, fund the Bush administration, fund the Bush campaign, and who are the biggest backers of Mr. Bush, all of us are Untermenschen. Anybody who's not in their little group, and it's a very small clique, only a few million people. I know it sounds like a lot, but really when you talk about a country of 300 million people, they're actually more like a couple of hundred thousand people. That's really not a lot of people. We're talking about the very, very wealthy of us. And they really, for the most part, just view us as Untermenschen, especially if you're a working Slav like me. If you go out there and you have to work and use your hands or something like that for a living, or even if you have to use your brains to a certain extent, if you get your paycheck from somebody else rather than making the money by being a business owner or, you know, getting business like that, then as far as they're concerned, you're less than human. You know, it's more than just a racial thing. It's just an entire attitude by Americans towards people who are different from them or whom they just don't like for whatever particular reason. I mean, there's, you know, it's more than just your usual, like, for example, Northerners treat Southerners as a bunch of, you know, redneck, rube jerks and being stupid. And, you know, they're true to a certain extent, but that's not true of the South totally, because I know a lot of highly intelligent Southern people. You know, it's just that This is how Americans think sometimes. And, you know, Southerners think that, you know, Northerners are a bunch of jerks and you know. But that's not necessarily meaning to say that they think they're subhuman or less than human. And, you know, when you're trying to take away somebody's rights, that's like the first step is to dehumanize them. To say, well, they're not human, therefore they don't deserve the same rights that we have. And, you know, the attitude of the American soldiers, if what the British officers say is true, and I have no reason to doubt their thing. And, of course, the British have experience with this, too, and I'll get into that in a second. But if what the Americans are doing is true, then we're never going to win this war in Iraq. We are never going to win this because we are an occupying army. If they had gone in there, like I started out saying, if they had gone in there and rebuilt the infrastructure immediately, worked with the Iraqi people, you know, even though we would not have been greeted immediately with flowers, and you know, Cheney was talking up his ass when he said that, because whether he knew it was going to be true or not, it was obviously wrong. And at the very least, you would think that we would be talking about that, or at least admitting that there have been problems. But if we had done the right thing to begin with, then we wouldn't be having these problems today. This is not a few thugs like the Bush administration and their media allies keep trying to tell us. This is a widespread insurrection. And it's not that they had any love for Saddam Hussein. In fact, these are some of the very people that Saddam was oppressing in the first place. They just view us as wanting our own deal and not really caring about them, which is, unfortunately, the truth, as far as the administration is concerned. And, of course, they're still trying to stonewall. I like what I heard the other day, Mr. Bush's speech, where he said, well, they didn't tell us. The memo that I got on August 6th didn't say anything about an attack in America. And, of course, the headline of the thing, the whole title, the subject of the entire memo was Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. And I don't know what Mr. Bush... I don't have words for it anymore. It's just they lie so often and so badly. You know, you'd at least think they'd be more creative about it, but it's so bad and just so obvious and blatant. And you wonder why... You know, sooner or later, somebody's head's going to explode. You know, some member of the press or some member of the administration is just going to say something that's going to short-circuit everything in their friggin' brain, and the whole head's going to explode like Scanners. You know, anybody remember that movie Scanners where that guy's head blew up? That's what it's going to be like. It would be funny to watch that, so long as you were a safe distance away. I don't want to get, you know, I'm not cleaning up that brain stuff in the back of the window like last time. Everybody saw the movie Pulp Fiction. Anyway, we're going to have some stuff. We're going to have a little special something, and then we're going to have some music. And we'll be back with another segment of the Cup of Joe radio show.
Welcome to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Message to Osama bin Laden from BuzzFlash. Next time you fly airplanes into American buildings, Bush wants you to draw him a map. After all, Bush said if he had known that terrorists were going to fly planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, he would have prevented it. Excuse us? Why didn't you just try to prevent hijackings in general instead of taking a month's vacation in Texas after being warned in August of 2001 for the umpteenth time that terrorists plan to hijack airplanes in the near future? Which reminds us, we not only have to live with Bush's ineptness, we have to pay him a salary, too, out of our tax dollars. You know, recently while entering a cab in D.C., the taxi driver was yelling at the radio, "It takes a village idiot to start a fire." Reports on the number of dead in Iraq were being aired, and the driver turned to BuzzFlash and shouted, "You know, only an idiot could unite the Sunnis and Shiites together against the United States." The cab driver, who was an immigrant from an African nation, clearly made more sense than any political commentator on Fox News or CNN. "You know, this man Bush is the village idiot," he added. "Where I come from, if there's a big fire, they say the village idiot started it. That's because the village idiot cannot work in the fields or do anything else for work. So he has a lot of time on his hands and plays with matches and starts a fire because he really doesn't know how to do anything else. Are you for this man Bush, your American village idiot?" he asked BuzzFlash. "Good Lord, no," we responded. Then tell me this, the cabbie continued. Everyone who comes into my taxi is against Bush. Then who voted for him? This is what I want to know. It must be the white Taliban. That's what I call your village idiot. It must be the white Taliban Baptists from Texas. They must like the village idiot there. But in my country, you lock the village idiot up and make sure that he isn't able to play with matches. Buzz Flash could not explain in the short ride to National Airport why half of America was still supporting the village idiot. In fact, to this day, we still aren't sure. But listening to this man with a frayed blue shirt, scratching a living out of driving a cab, we were embarrassed that we lived in a nation where half the population allowed the village idiot to play with fire and also approved of his arsonist undertakings. I had a woman in my cab the other day, the driver told Buzz Flash as he helped get our luggage out of the trunk. And she was at a conference in Europe, and she said that she pretended she was Canadian because people there were so upset with America. Can you believe that? Yes. Unfortunately, we can. That's what happens when the village idiot is put in charge of the most powerful nation on earth and given a box of matches. For this reason, and far too many others to recount, George W. Bush, the village idiot of the world, is the BuzzFlash GOP hypocrite of the week. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
Don't do that, Al. Weird Al Yankovic. Happy birthday. Before that, we had Taxman by the Beatles, and before that, we had Pink Floyd with money. I'm sure I'm not the first person to mix money and tax man together in one little segment. But you might be wondering why I put Weird Al's happy birthday at the end of it. It's because my father's birthday is on April the 15th, tax day. And, of course, we began the whole thing with our friends from BuzzFlash.com. BuzzFlash is a great resource for those of you on the left. And that is their GOP Hypocrite of the Week. And I just found out that they had that, and I got their permission to toss it into the show here, and I'm going to do that every week. They do one every week. Of course, I try to do two shows a week as much as possible. As I speak, today is Thursday, and Thursday is when I try to put a show out. Thursday and Sunday. Check your calendars. Put it on your schedule. Thursday and Sunday. Usually I try to do it very early, and it's 1:34 a.m. on Thursday as I speak. This is the Cup of Joe Radio Show. This is episode number 24. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. Once again, I want to remind everybody of the blog. That's http://. I love the sound of that. :// It's cupofjoe.blogspot.com. There's no www. That's not necessary. Just cupofjoe, C-U-P-O-J-O-E, C-U-P-O-J-O-E, .blogspot.com, B-L-O-G-S-P-O-T. And Blogspot has been hosting my site, well, for a long time. Well, since I began in October, of course, and before that they hosted my Pax Liberalis site. Let's see, as I said, it's 1:30 a.m. What else is going on here? There was something on Daily Chaos the other day, and Daily Coast, excuse me. I've been calling it Daily Chaos because I thought that's what it was, but apparently the guy's name is Marcos, and he says, no, it's not pronounced chaos, it's pronounced coast. So I apologize for calling it Daily Chaos all that time. But he asked a very simple question. It's actually one that I asked a while ago during the primary season when it was still an active primary, because I was a supporter, as all everybody knows, of Governor Howard Dean for president. I'm still a supporter of Governor Dean. I think he is what the Democrats need. And while I admire John Kerry for a lot of other things, I don't think he's what we need right now. But the question is, and the question that he asked, and the question I'm asking is, why is John Kerry running for president? I mean, if you look at the people who were running in the Democratic primary, everybody had their own reason. I mean, actually, my favorite reason or my favorite slogan from the whole thing is John Edwards, Two Americas. And I thought that was brilliant the way he put it. It's very simple. There's one America that works, and I think we all know who those people are. And there's another one, another America that reaps the benefits of that work, and I think we all know who those people are. And I thought that was an excellent, excellent thing. What I admired about Governor Dean was his straightforwardness and basically his ideas about being practical. You know, if you're going to do stuff for practical reasons. You know, the Bush people are basically ideologues, and they have their own agendas. Whatever they are, you know, whether you're talking about oil or power or whatever the hell their agendas are, they're not going to tell us. And they certainly don't care about us. So Edwards had his deal. Gephardt wanted to run for the working people. He was a big union guy, but I still think a lot of it was just his own vanity and ego, because I can't imagine why he would think anybody would seriously take him seriously as president. Dennis Kucinich is still technically in the race. He has not dropped out yet, as far as I know. But he's obviously standing up for the hard left, and that's fine. I happen to like Dennis Kucinich a lot. In fact, I was beginning to do some work. I wound up never actually doing any work for them, for a group of people who were hardcore Dennis Kucinich supporters, and they were trying to get me over. And I'm like, you know, look, it really doesn't matter if I agree with him on a lot of issues or not. The question isn't always agreement on the issues. The question is whether or not he has the ability to make these things work. It may have been true that Governor Dean wouldn't have been able to get things together, but as a governor, he better understands how to run a presidency than would a senator who, you know, generally is. It's a different type of situation. I'm not disparaging senators, and I'm certainly not disparaging Senator Kerry, who is a war hero and a very strong advocate for peace, but You know, I really don't think Kerry is what we need now. And I just don't get any sense of why he's really running for president. I am going to urge people to vote for him. And if they can afford it, to support him financially. I will make an attempt to when I get a little extra money. I have to be very careful about, you know, every dollar right now, even though I'm doing fairly well. But that's what I want to, you know, if you're out there, and in fact, that's one thing I forgot to mention earlier. My email is joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec@bellsouth.net. If anybody can give me, and I'm, you know, and I look on the site and, you know, it's all the things and blah, 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 fine. But in general, why do you think John Kerry is running for president? I really just don't see it. I just don't see it. I put a thing up on the blog, and I got actually some comments about it because, you know, when you're trying to publicize the site and get more people to log in, you have to sometimes do things. And I don't always have time to do certain things, but sometimes I get lucky. And on Atrio's site, who we had last week, a little excerpt of him on Air America Radio, and he has a comment section just like I do. And I actually managed to catch when he just posted. And that's, if you want to get noticed on Atrios by other people, that's when you got to do. You got to click on those comments very soon. You want to get in the top 10 if you possibly can, because once you get into 200 or 300, people are just not going to scroll down to them. But I happened to catch the beginning, and I just made a couple of quick comments pertinent to the subject he was talking about, and I got a lot of hits from that. And I was up over 100 hits the last couple of days, but I don't always have time for that. But anyway, I made a comment. And I posted something on the blog asking a very simple question. If George Bush were an hourly worker and he had screwed up on the job as badly as he's screwing up in Iraq and as badly as he's screwing up the economy, just generally fucking everything up, if he had done as badly and was an hourly worker, would he still be working? And one of the commenters, I actually had four comments on, or actually three comments. One was by me, and one, in fact, from my brother, and I'll talk about that in a second. One of the guys asked, if your boss had screwed up that badly, would you still be working? You know, and the fact of the matter is that bosses, unfortunately, very rarely take that kind of responsibility for what goes on. Supervisor, depending on how big the company you're in, if you're talking about the company owner, if you work for a very small company, generally, they're not going to take any kind of credit for, or not credit, but any kind of responsibility for their screw-ups. They'll find some way to blame it on somebody else. Every now and then you get a good boss that will do that, that you can talk to, and honestly, you know. And if you work for a bigger company, your supervisor tends not to really listen that much. Excuse me, Matt. And they're liable to blame somebody other than themselves for problems that go on. We've been having some problems where I'm working lately with one of our forklift drivers, and he kind of goes off in his own little world sometimes. He doesn't really pay much attention, and I was trying to put stuff. Okay, for those of you who don't know, and I'll go through it very briefly. I work in a steel factory. We make boxes for electrical circuits. You know, those big boxes you have in the wall with all the switches and stuff like that. We make those. And they're all painted gray, and my job is to pull them off the line after they get painted. It's like an overhanging conveyor belt. So anyway, you put stuff either on pallets or in baskets, depending on the type of object. And we had these little boxes, little flip-open circuit boxes that were coming down the line. And we had there was a short break in the line. Basically, there was a point in time where they weren't hanging anything. Usually about 10 or 15 minutes a day. It happens once a day for us, around 4:30. Between 4:30 and 4:45. And we had just gotten through that, and we had a pallet that was almost full and was only like one box on the lowest level left. And I just needed to put that box on and put a piece of cardboard. So, you know, and that box had been sitting there for like 15 minutes or so. That pallet had been sitting there for like 15 minutes or so. And nobody had touched it. And finally, the parts are coming down, and they're coming down pretty quick. It's the same boxes, and they're coming one on every hook, which is pretty fast. Every hook passes by, or every hanger has two hooks, but every hanger passes by one every 5 seconds. So if they're hanging every hook, that means you have 5 seconds to grab it and put it where it needs to go. And if you have to stop and take some extra time to grab some cardboard to put in between the layers of boxes, then sometimes you can get caught behind if you're by yourself or whatnot. Well, I'm just about ready to place the one box on the bottom part of the pallet so I can go ahead and do that quickly. I walked up the line a little bit to grab it before it came down to us so I can get it down there so I can put a piece of cardboard and start the next row. Well, the second I do that, our forklift driver guy comes along and picks up the pallet with the forklift. And I can't lay the part down while it's moving around on the forklift. He just basically wants to move it over one spot. I was like, why are you doing this now? When I'm in the middle of trying to, and I wound up having to pull, just drop the boxes off the line and drop them right on the floor until he finished. And you know, unfortunately, he's not a very good forklift driver. And he was bumping into things and moving around. And I'm like, I'm just giving him a dirty look. And he was upset with me the whole day after that. But, you know, and it's like, look, you're in my way. You know, we're really in the middle where we work. We're kind of in the middle because you have the people who hang the parts on the line. And we're slaves to what they do, how many parts they hang, and how they hang them, how much they pack everything on there, as much as they can throw on. And then on the other end, we have the guys with the forklift who, when we're finished with the pallets, are supposed to be able to take them away, and the basket's the same way. As soon as we're finished, you know, in theory anyway, they should be able to, once a basket is full, once a pallet is full, they should pull it off so we have, you know, empty pallets and places to put stuff when they come off the line. If there's no pallet or no place to put the stuff, we have to turn the line off. We have to stop it. And that lets a bell go off, and the supervisor's got to come over, and nobody's happy. You know, to me, I always look at things as a nice, big, efficient process, and it really irks me when things get in the way of that efficiency, of that kind of smoothness. And it really, really does bother me when that sort of happens. It bothers me more than it should, to be perfectly honest. But I guess that's just maybe a little bit of the obsessive compulsive behavior. You know, if anybody had ever, like, worked with me or anything like that, I'm one of those people that people never forget. They never forget me because I am such an unusual personality. And it was funny because some guy was asking me, it was kind of a joke, he said, you know, we can set you up with some Viagra. And I'm like, you obviously haven't met my wife. You know, I told that to my wife, and she just started laughing. And she's like, are you kidding? You know, my wife and I really, really do love each other. We get along very well. We're like, it's like being married to your best friend. And we've been, it's 2 years, 11 months now. It'll be May 14th, actually, is our anniversary date. So last year for our anniversary, we went up to New York City, and I did a big post about that on my old blog, Pax Liberalis. We stayed for a week, and my sister was generous enough to let me stay at her place. Let me talk a little bit about myself here. Those of you who've been listening to the show for a while, you know, people come to political decisions about politics and stuff like that when they do, or this is just their opinions about life in general, for a lot of different reasons. And there are some people I do not criticize too harshly for their opinions because I understand that, you know, there was a product of their environment where they grew up. Down here in the South, for example, people are very anti-union, and that's part of the way they grow up. And, you know, I really wish they could change that because they're really being hurt by that attitude in the long run because they don't think about working together, you know, as workers and as brothers and sisters, regardless of whether you like them or not or whether you agree with them or not. You know, they're your working brothers and sisters, and in unity you have some strength. And you have the power to make some choices. But there's a tradition down here of just not doing that, of being, you know, self-sufficient and stuff like that. And, you know, and I can understand that to a certain extent when it molds people's opinions. But I grew up in a very different type of environment. And because of that, I have different viewpoints on stuff like that. So let me talk just a little bit about myself and who I am and why I came to the opinions that I did, and especially when I'm talking about politics and workers' issues. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, to a family that really didn't talk very much to us. I mean, my mother and father loved me. I mean, there was no question there, but they really were not that open. And they talked to you sometimes, but they never talked to you about their, you know, about what had gone on in their life and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, they were in their world, and we were in our world. And our world, and my world in particular, was kind of like, you know, you go to school and you go to church. I was raised Catholic, and now I'm an agnostic. Catholicism tends to breathe agnosticism a lot, because a lot of it is just ritual, and I just really didn't care for the ritual very much. You know, there were some parts I didn't mind. I actually didn't mind the Bible readings. But I grew up in that kind of environment, and it was really kind of secluded. And I have aunts and uncles and stuff like that, and we're always together with family. I mean, every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, certainly. But you know, my aunt and my uncle live right on the next block over. And, you know, New York City is a very interesting place to grow up, especially Brooklyn, because even though it's a big city, and Brooklyn is a large part of that, like 4 million people live in Brooklyn, the bulk of the population of New York City, the neighborhoods are still very distinct and different. You did not play, for example, with any of the kids on any of the other blocks. And it was a completely different world, but you played the same games, and you did the same things. And we were a very... I don't want to say we were in poverty, but we were very lower middle class. Rent was very low, so we could afford it. You know, my dad was making, I think, $6.50 an hour in like 66, 68, somewhere around there. And on that salary alone, he was able to support a family of five. Can you imagine that today, trying to make a living on $6.50 an hour? And a lot of people are still making that. So, but they were not very open about what their lives were beforehand. And I didn't know anything about it until just recently when they finally started to open up. My mother passed away 20-something years ago in 79. Well, not quite 20 years ago, but getting there. And, you know, it was a shame that I never got to know her that much more, because basically all she was interested in is, you know, what are my grades in school and stuff like that. She never really talked to me. And my sister and brother, it was the same way with them. And I never really kind of fit in, no matter where I was. I mean, I kind of hung out with my sister's friends, who, and they were older, you know, because my sister is a year older than I am, and my brother is like 3 or 4 years younger, depending on the time of year. And I never really kind of fit in. So I always had this kind of loner, do-it-yourself attitude. I'm still kind of the black sheep of the family. I wrote a column about that, because I do all these goofy things like, you know, write a blog and do a little radio show, you know. And I guess the reason why eventually I became a Democrat and left-wing, so to speak, is because I see myself as a kind of a victim and as an underdog and as someone who, quite frankly, wouldn't do very well in the dog-eat-dog kind of world that the Republicans love, that, you know, use your own skills to make your own way, blah, blah, blah. You know, I wouldn't do very well in that. I'm going to be flat honest about it. I'm not very good with money. I never have been. I've always been poor, and I've always basically just made enough to survive because I tend to spend money when I get it. And it's a habit I need to stop, I know, but it's very difficult when you just not. And you know, I'd go after it more seriously, but there's a lot of people who are like me, just not very good with money. And again, I never have been. And when I started paying attention to politics, and actually that started around 15 or 20 years ago, the one thing that I noticed that Republicans were all pricks. All the guys that I knew were Republicans were just over-the-top, arrogant assholes and just mean towards other people, racist, bigoted. And all the people that I knew that were left-wingers were kind of cool. They were kind of like me. You know, and I felt more comfortable. It's like, for the most part, I feel more comfortable around black people than I do around white people. Now, I'm a white guy. I'm Italian, Sicilian, if you want to be more specific. And I'm not, you know, I'm hardly what you call a, you know, a, whatever the slang term is for, you know, a cool person now. I've never been like that. And I don't really hang around with black people in that sense. But at work and stuff like that, when I talk to people, I tend to get along with black people a little more because I think I understand where they're coming from. I also tolerate a lot more from black people because there are some black people who are just as racist as white people in their own way. But they being the oppressed, and they are the oppressed, I tend to give them a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. Doesn't necessarily mean I agree or like some of the things that I hear, but I give them the benefit of the doubt more. So I really, when I come to my, opinions on life, the universe, and everything. And the reason I am the way I am is because I know that in the world of laissez-faire, objectivist, libertarian, which is a bullshit philosophy to me, but that's besides the point, I wouldn't last very long. You know, I wouldn't last very long at all because I'm not that tough. And I'm just a guy who likes to enjoy my life and who wants to work. I mean, I'm not a lazy person, but I have a less tolerance for the bullshit than most people do. A lot of people just put up with it, you know, and because they need the money and they need the job and need to support themselves and survive. And I kind of reached a point in my life where I just said, that's not worth it. You know, don't put up with the bullshit. Yes, you go through some hard times, but in the long run, it's worth it. My brother, who actually made a comment on the blog, I was surprised. He sends me email stuff all the time, usually just you know, the typical jokes and goofy pictures, and I get a good laugh out of it. But he, you know, I gained a lot of respect for him recently because he quit a job that he was making a lot of money at because he was just tired of it. He was making, like, I think $20-$25 an hour, which is a decent salary, but he was tired with all the bullshit from his boss. His boss was an incompetent jerk, and they were making everybody work overtime. He was working 50 to 60 hours a week, every single week, and he was like, he was starting to go a little nuts. I mean, he couldn't enjoy himself. How can you enjoy yourself when you're working that many hours? And some people down there say, well, you should just keep doing that. You know, work is everything. And work is not everything. You know, and as I keep telling people, look, if you can find the job doing what you like to do, and you've got it set up, do it. If you've got a job that you hate and you found something else that you like, even if it's maybe making a little less money and you have to sacrifice a little more, damn it, do it. Your mental health, your mental well-being will be so much better for it. You simply can't imagine what it's like to just enjoy what you're doing. Your stress level goes down. You don't have to worry about your heart. You know? I mean, I work where I work and I don't mind working there, but you know, if I had a choice, if somebody picks me up to do like a radio show or to write for a magazine or something like that, you know, if I'm making about as much as what I'm making there, making at my current job, guess what? I'm gone. Union or no union, you know, stability or no stability, I would rather do something that I enjoy. Now, to some people, that's just plain wrong. Some people think, especially some of my older relatives who grew up in a different era, granted, a lot of them grew up in the Depression, you know, you work, you do your job. And that was just basically the mindset of that generation. I mentioned that it was my father's birthday. He's going to be 83. Well, he is 83 today. He was born in 1921. Think about that, 1921. Think of what the world was like in 1921. World War I had just finished. There wasn't a clue that World War II was going to be around. Adolf Hitler was still a disgruntled ex-soldier looking for work. Excuse me. The idea of computers doing anything like this. I remember several years ago, back when, in fact, I had my old Amiga computer, I was putting together a newsletter of sorts, and my dad was just amazed how the image from the screen just transferred onto paper like that. It was just something completely out of his experience growing up in the 20s or so. And the mindset of that generation, and, you know, growing up during the Depression, as my father did and a lot of my older relatives did, was that you just work. If you hate your job, that's no excuse. You work. And, I don't know, maybe I just want something better. But in brief, that's just a little bit about myself and where I come from and why I come from where I come from. And I don't even necessarily have a problem with people who have what you would call libertarian ideas, but the problem is a lot of them are such a bunch of mindless jerks, and they're so arrogant, and they don't realize that a lot of the things they have are due, in fact, to people like myself and other people who go out there and work and do all the dirty jobs that need to be done. But as I keep saying, and I'll tell you guys again and again and again, if you go out and you find yourself something that you enjoy doing, do it. Quit your damn job. If your boss has been really bad for you, quit and be as verbally abusive with him or her as you can be. You don't have to put up with the shit. You just don't have to put up with it. Go out there and stand up for yourself. if you can find a way to start your own business, go and do it. Just remember to treat your workers with respect. You know, that's really all most working people want, just to be treated with respect, where your bosses and your supervisors, whoever is in charge of you, understand that you're doing them a favor, a big favor, by going and doing the dirty work that they don't necessarily want to do. And the only reason that they are capable right now of lording it over you is because working people now are not sticking up for each other. And because you don't have that unity, because it's just you, you don't have that kind of power. And it takes a lot of courage to go out and try to do something new and something different. But find that courage within yourself. If you've got something you want to do and you can enjoy doing it, and you know, like, and I'm not saying do something stupid like just quit your job with nothing behind it. But if you've got something and you can work something out, or if you just go out and look for work while you're not working, some people do that, just find something you enjoy doing and go do it. And you got a crappy job and you don't like it, get the hell out. You'll be better off and you'll thank yourself later on. Let's have a little more music and some stuff, and we'll be back with another segment of the Cup of Joe radio show.
This week on TPTN Radio.
I see when all this hell is breaking out in Iraq. He's home clearing brush.
Well, I like what somebody says, you know, whenever there's trouble, George takes a powder.
He's gone,
folks.
That's what he did after that August 6th presidential briefing.
I don't see how I could possibly have imagined a plane crashing into something and destroying it. I never watched a John Wayne movie or had a drink called what? A kamikaze. They named a freaking drink after it, idiot.
TPTM Radio, on the web at TakeBackTheMedia.com.
As the executor of Mr. Muldoon's estate, I have been empowered to read Mr. Muldoon's last will and testament.
Well, get on with it. The bar's open soon.
Oh, poor dear Arthur.
There, Jenny. God, how predictably boring.
I never worked for a kinder man.
If we are all seated, I shall proceed with the reading.
I knew it.
I, Arthur Durham Muldoon, being of sound mind and body...
That's a laugh.
...do hereby divide up my considerable estate as follows. To my overly emotional sister, Jenny...
Jenny, darling, he's talking about us.
Oh.
...who grubbed with her husband, Hank, grubbed for everything they could get from me, and then cried crocodile tears when I needed sympathy...
What?
...to Jenny, I leave a boot to the head.
A what?
Jenny, are you okay?
And another boot to her wimpy husband, Hank.
Ow!
But still, you are my sister. You have both admired my Rolls Royce, and since I no longer need it...
Oh, dear Arthur, he's too kind.
I bequeath another boot to the head.
What? Ow!
And one more for the wimp.
Ow!
Next to my alcoholic brother...
Hey, I don't want no boot to the head.
To dear Hedge, who has never worked a day in his drunken life...
I'm covering up my head.
I leave my wine cellar and 3 crates of my finest whiskey.
Really?
And a boot to the head.
Oh!
And another for Jenny and the wimp.
Oh!
Next, to my know-it-all nephew, Ralston...
This is so predictable.
I leave a boot to the head.
Oh, I knew it.
And one for Jenny and the wimp.
Oh! Oh!
This takes care of family obligations. And now to Mrs. Mulroy.
Oh, I don't want nothing.
Who took care of me faithfully these many, many years. Who cared, made me laugh, brought me tea.
Oh, I didn't mind.
To Mrs. Mulroy, I bequeath a boot to the head.
Oh!
And one for Jenny and the wimp.
Ah! Oh!
And so to my cat Mittens, I leave my entire vast boot to the head. And finally, to my lawyer, who has helped me on this will, I leave not a boot to the head, but a rabid Tasmanian devil to be placed in his trousers. And I leave my entire estate of $10 million to the people of Calgary so they can afford to move somewhere decent.
Is that it?
That's it?
That's disgraceful.
There's one last thing for everyone.
Cover your heads, everybody.
I leave everyone a lifetime supply of ice cream.
Ice cream?
Ice cream.
Ice cream, that's all?
That's all.
Well, what flavor is it?
Boot to the head.
This is www.bartcop.com.
Wednesday morning, I turn on my Yahoo. See a headline, threat names Thailand as Iraq target after Spain. What happened is the Thailand embassy in Sweden got a letter from Al-Qaeda saying that they were next because they were cooperating with Satan. That would be us. Amazingly, Thailand's Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra told reporters that Thai troops are only in Iraq for humanitarian purposes. Quote, I can assure you that nothing will happen. Can you believe this guy? I can assure you nothing will happen. If you count every country that sent a case of bottled water to Iraq, half the world is going to be threatened by Al-Qaeda. And doesn't it make you wonder how different things might be right now if George Bush had concentrated on Al-Qaeda instead of Saddam? 5 hours after the World Trade Centers were hit, they were working on Iraq. They didn't care about Al-Qaeda. They didn't care about the people who caused the problem. They wanted Iraq's oil. That was number one. They didn't care about Al-Qaeda. They gave them a 2-year head start. So for 2 years, Osama and his buddies are up in the mountains, recruiting and planning and plotting and training. And all the time, Bush is saying, he doesn't concern me. The real problem's Iraq. And why is he not being impeached for this? By going after the relatively innocent Saddam. I mean, Saddam's a bad man, yeah, but Saddam didn't bring down the World Trade Centers. That was Al-Qaeda. But Bush didn't want to go after them because there wasn't enough profit in it. Halliburton can't make a profit in northern Afghanistan. No, they can make a big profit, though, in Iraq, because Afghanistan doesn't have enough oil. They conquer Afghanistan, and instead of going after Al-Qaeda, they say, let's take everybody over to Iraq instead. So now we're bogged down in Iraq. As far as the dead, it's hard to keep track. They're coming in now by the dozens. It used to be, you know, we'd lose three in a weekend or something. We lost, they say, 30 so far in April. And all because Bush had to give Al-Qaeda a two-year head start. And Bush is not even going after them. They robbed the bank, and the sheriffs grabbed a posse, went the other way. They ran out of town to the north, and so Sheriff Bush grabbed a posse and rode south because he knew where there was some oil. Nobody's holding him accountable for it. Surely not the Democrats, surely not the press, and amazingly, not the military families who've lost somebody. I feel bad that these men are dying for no reason. Those hundreds of dead men, the thousands of maimed and blind men, and men without memories, thousands of them, for no reason at all, just because the little boy got greedy. And so why is he not impeached? Once again, the Democrats, they just can't muster up the courage.
I think I've lost my way.
That was a free sample from Bart Kopp's radio show, www.bartkopp.com. He does a radio show on his site, and it's very good. And if you can afford it, I highly advise everyone to go out there and subscribe to it. It's a very good show, very well produced. And that we started out with Mike Post with his theme for the Rockford Files and the Frantics, Last Will and Temperament, a sequel, as it were, to the famous boot, Taekwon Leap boot to the head bit that we actually had last week. And there was a little commercial there for TakeBackTheMedia.com. They have an excellent radio show, too. There's a lot of excellent radio out there. You can see it on some of the individual sites, and you can also go to our sponsor, to so to speak, WhiteRoseSociety.org. They have many different shows on there. You can pick and choose. Most of them are free. Bart Kopp, you have to pay for, but that's okay. He is well worth it. Of course, this is the Cup of Joe radio show, episode Joe. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice for those who have been unvoiced by the Bush administration and its anti-worker policies. My website is www.cupojoe.com. Actually, I don't even have to have the www, just cupojoe.blogspot.com. Or if you're too lazy to write all that, you can just go to www.cupjoe.com. And you can access the radio show from there, or at WhiteRoseSociety.org, which hosts my archives, as I said. And I also would like you to email me, joevec@bellsouth.net. Please email me. Let me know not just what you think of the show, but if you have any suggestions for music or topics that you might like me to talk about. Let's see. There was an article in the Times that struck me, the New York Times, today, and it's about labor relations, or a negotiating stall with labor with the voice actors on The Simpsons. Now, these guys make a lot of money. They make a lot more than you or I do. But they're wanting more money because the show is making a lot more money the show is making so much money that they want a bigger piece of the pie. Currently, they are making, I think, $120,000 per episode. They want to make $360,000 per episode. Now, I know what half of you are saying, oh, my God, they're making so much money. I want everybody to help support these guys. I don't mean financially, obviously, but your emotional support should be behind them. They are sticking together, and if you stick together, you'll get benefits from it, too. I mean, let's face it, none of us out here, nobody listening, at least as far as I know, is going to be making $120,000 to $360,000 a year. Certainly, I do not envision myself making that kind of money. But there is a tendency that we have, as working people, to pull other people down. That is, rather than saying, what can I do to help myself earn more money? We have the attitude, especially when you're talking about baseball players, football players, and actors, and like Mr. Castellaneta, Ms. Kavner, Ms. Cartwright, all these people who do such wonderful work on The Simpsons, which is one of the funniest shows that's ever been on television. You need to take a look at that and realize that The reason why they're making so much money is because they're so popular. And we're never going to make, even though that we're never going to make that kind of money, we should try to raise ourselves up to get closer to their level rather than try to bring them down to our level. You know, so I want everybody to be supportive of them from an emotional point of view. If you can write a letter to Fox, write an email to Fox letting them know that you support the, you know, the show would not be the same. Homer is not Homer without Dan Castellaneta. Dan Castellaneta is the voice of not just Homer, but a lot of the guys on that show. I don't have a list right here in front of me, but I think he does something like 20 or 30 different voices on that show. And I think that as working people, we need to understand that the reason why these people make so much money is because they tend to stick together. And they have a union. The Screen Actors Guild, I think, covers all of them. And, the, you know, Fox's argument is, well, it's just an animated series, and they don't, you know, they're not celebrities in the same sense that the people on, say, Seinfeld or Friends were celebrities. But they are an integral part of the show. You can't have Homer without Dan Castellaneta. Nobody can do that voice. Nobody else can do that voice. This is a show that has earned, according to the article, about $2.5 billion for Fox. And, you know, when these guys first started out, the first season or so, they were only making about $3,000 an episode. Nobody really expected it to run this long. It is now in its 15th season. And Dan Castellaneta in particular is one of the main reasons. Julie Kavner, who does Marge and who does Patty and Selma and all the members of the Marge's family, basically, she is one of the most talented actresses this country has ever had. She's great on television. She was great on the Gracie Allman Show. Just one of those really, one of those actors that I have a lot of respect for. Very rarely gets a starring role in anything, but has been great in everything she has been in. She was in Awakenings with Robin Williams. She was in Hannah and Her Sisters with Woody Allen. She even had a movie, I think it was called It Only Hurts When I Laugh, where she played a housewife who became a stand-up comic, kind of like, you know, Roseanne, where she talked about her life and made that the subject. Dan Castellaneta had a one-man show on Broadway that was, from all everything I heard about it, a laugh riot. If you saw him when they did the whole Simpsons cast on that Inside the Actor's Studio, you can just see the tremendous talent that he has. It's not easy being a voice actor. It is not easy being a voice actor. And I'm going to hopefully talk to some people about that. I know some people in that industry, and I'm going to try to get them to talk about that. But they're worth every penny. They're worth every penny. They should get what they want out of that because Fox is making a lot of money off of them, and they can't just sit there and say that it doesn't matter who they put as a voice on there. It's just simply not true. It is simply not true. They are not the same characters. And this is one of the most successful shows. It is the longest-running animated series ever. It is one of my personal favorites. So I urge everybody out there listening, and if Mr. Birch is right, I have about 200 or 300 regular listeners, and that's really great for a show that does absolutely no advertising. I do very little, if at all. But I want everybody to go ahead and write letters of support for the actors and actresses to Fox. I doubt we'll get more than a few, but it's important that you support them. And by supporting them, you help yourselves in the long run. Work together with your fellow workers. If you're jealous at the money they make, I understand that everybody's having tough times. I have tough times myself. I do not, what's the word for it? I don't, not envy, that's not the right word. I'm not going to begrudge them. I think that's right. Their right to make what they deserve. And for what they do, they deserve what they can get. And you deserve to make more money from what you're doing, for the most part. If you're out there and you're a working guy like me, I deserve more money for what I'm doing. And I'm going to be with the union very shortly. I'm not quite with the IBEW yet, but you know, as a union member, I want to help to work together to make all of my working brothers and sisters a better life for themselves, whether I like them personally or not. I mean, you don't have to get along with your fellow workers to understand that you're all in it together. And in unity, there's strength. That's the only weapon that we have on our side is unity. That's the only way we can counter, you know, the massive amount of money and organization that these people have. Because whatever else you can say about the poor, the working poor, and the middle class, there's a lot more of us than there are of them. The top 1% may own of the country, the wealthiest 1% may own something like 50 or 60% of the wealth. But you know what? They're only 1% of the country. You know, about 3 million people. And the middle class is in the hundreds of million people. Guess what? In a society, you know, where it doesn't matter how much money you have, when it goes to the polls, everybody has one vote. Bill Gates has one vote, just like I have one vote. And that's the truth. And so do, you know, Mr. Castellaneta, Ms. Kavner, Ms. Cartwright, and all the other people, Hank Azaria, who does the show, and they all do wonderful work. So don't pull everybody down. Don't bitch about the money that baseball players make and basketball players make. Because these are people who have to work at the top of their field, and there's only so many people that can work in professional sports. I think if you took all the professional sports combined, you're talking about no more than 2,000 people, less than that, really. Only a few hundred for baseball, only a few hundred for basketball, only a few hundred for football or hockey. So if you took baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, which are the four major sports in America, team sports, you're talking less than 2,000 people, less than 1,000 people probably. And that's not a lot of people when you consider a country of 300 million people. So work together and you'll get better pay, better benefits, you get the things that you deserve. Work as a unit and you can defeat the Republican Party. We Democrats tend to be very fractured. Will Rogers once said, and this was way back when, but it still fits today, he said, "I don't belong to any organized political group, I'm a Democrat." And we're still that way, we're still split up and fighting with each other and all that. And we got to stop that. We have to work together because the common enemy are the people who are behind, not just the Bush administration and in particular, but the people who are behind them financially. Anyway, once more, I'm going to remind you of the website, cupojoe.blogspot.com, an email address, joevec@bellsouth.net. And this is Joe Vecchio signing off for episode 24 of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. And remember, let's all hang together, or we'll surely all hang separately. Bye. Bye.